Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Holtcast. Hope everyone is doing well. Cole Petum here as always, and it feels like it's been forever since we've done a podcast and since Villa have played, but of course Villa have played as of this past Friday. You're hearing this on the Monday, of course, a 1-0 win over Southampton. Jacob Ramsey getting the lone goal in what was a very I guess maybe not the greatest promotion for a podcast, but a very drab and gritty result, if you want to give it some a little bit of positivity in some way. But albeit Villa aren't playing well, but they got the result, so that's all that matters. But of course, I am joined by Tom Nightingale as well. Tom, it's been a while, but how's it going for you?
It has been a while, hasn't it? You're right. It felt like so long. That the draw against Man City feels like a month ago.
Yeah.
Easily, yeah. But yeah, I mean, nice. It's always feel a bit risky when you're playing on a Friday, because there's the potential for your weekend to be ruined before it starts. So it's nice for it to go the other way. Always a lovely feeling, isn't it, when Villa win, and hasn't been happening too often these days. I think you're right about it being drab. It wasn't exactly, you know, no one's going to remember that game really, are they? But a win's a win. So can't be too, given the way that things have gone so far, can't be too disappointed with that. I'll say early on as well, like I'm really, really pleased for Jacob Ramsey to get his first goal of the season, because I think his, you know, there was a lot of expectation, I think, on him after last season, because he had such a great breakout season, especially when he went on that run where it seemed like he was scoring or assisting, you know, every other game. And I thought his performances, like so many of our team, to be honest, had been a little bit flat early this season, but assist against City, goal this weekend, not too shabby at all. So yeah, really pleased for him. And just, I mean, just an important win, wasn't it? I think it was really disappointing that we didn't get to play Leicester, because they're in a real situation, aren't they, at the moment? And I think by the time that game's rearranged, it's probably going to be 2023. And to be quite frank, who knows what position Leicester will be in by that point. So that was a real shame. And so I think that game being postponed made it even more important to get the 3 points against Southampton. So yeah, job done.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when they lost, was it 6-2 against Spurs?
Yeah,
I believe so. So, I mean, that puts that in perspective. And also by that time, probably Brendan Rodgers will be gone. So any opportunity to actually have some kind of mental advantage that Villa fans probably think we would have going into that game will be gone. But that's Villa's luck. I feel like that happens all the time when we actually want to play someone, something kind of buggers up and it just doesn't happen. But of course, looking at the table very quickly, of course, Villa sit now 13th on 7th points after 7 games, -4 goal differential. Of course, Bournemouth, Wolves, Palace and Everton, West Ham, and of course Leicester are still on 6 games. So, and there's a bunch of other teams still on 6 games too. So there'll be a little bit of catch up. I'm sure we'll maybe drop a place or two depending how those pick up. Actually, looking at it, has nothing to do with this podcast. I'm shocked to say that Crystal Palace are 16th. For some reason, I thought they were doing much better than us. But regardless of that, it's good to know. But getting back into it, Tom, I mean, with the initial setup, I mean, it's pretty obvious what we knew it to expect in terms of the lineup. Of course, there were some doubts, and we did a Twitter Spaces on Thursday. So cheeky plug, go follow us on 7500 Holt if you want to get involved with those. Probably every couple of weeks we do them. And of course, there was concerns about Emi Martinez being or missing out, I should say, through illness. Robin Olsen as well through a knee injury. There was some concern over Ollie Watkins too with illness, but all of them seemed to pull through. Olsen was on the bench. Emi Martinez didn't really seem to take much of a warm-up. I did see a funny gif of the warm-up being done in the Villa toilet, so if that's where it was done, fair enough. And he picks up a clean sheet when he's ill too, so fair enough as well. Ollie Watkins makes it too, but I mean, in terms of the lineup, as I guess, as it not being surprising, were you happy with it for the most part?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I have this problem of I think I like Emi Buendia a little bit too much because I'm always disappointed when Emi Buendia is not in the lineup. But I didn't have any complaints when I saw. I know there's a lot of talk about John McGinn. You know, a lot of fans want John McGinn dropped, which I do understand based on his performance level is not really where you want it to be. But I think a lot of our fans need to sort of open their eyes to the fact that John McGinn is not getting dropped. Like, he's just not. I know what Gerrard said about having multiple leaders in the squad and being captain doesn't guarantee him games, but like, it would take a lot for Gerrard to drop John McGinn, I think. And actually, I thought McGinn was one of our poorer players for most of the game. I thought he stepped up a bit last 10, 15 minutes to sort of make sure that we held on to the win. But, and then Coutinho. I was happy to, I was, you know, sometimes I don't really feel like Coutinho is a player for every game. I've said this before on the pod, I think, like, I'm wary of us seeing Coutinho as like an automatic starter because I don't think that's good for us as a club or even for Coutinho, to be honest. But I did think Southampton at home was a good game to start him in. And I actually thought I think it was his best performance of the season so far. I thought he was, probably our driving force going forward, looking to make things happen. Looked a lot more comfortable and consistent on the ball. And I thought Watkins, you know, you mentioned Watkins because there was some doubt. I was expecting to see Danny Ings up front based on the talk about Watkins being ill and stuff before the game. I thought considering that Watkins was apparently not very well before the game, and also considering that Ollie Watkins, I think, has a difficult role in our team. He's got quite a thankless job, really, leading the line. Doesn't get that many chances. Is often sort of tasked with holding the ball up when he's got two defenders on him, you know, breathing down his neck. And I thought he did very, very well, really. The last two games, I thought this is after City as well. I think he's leading the line really well. About as well as you can do for a team like us, who, to be frank, we're not experts at keeping hold of the ball. We don't create chance after chance after chance in the game. So like I said, it's quite a thankless job for him. But I think he's leading the line really well. Hit the woodwork again, didn't he? I saw some stat that only Ashley Young has hit the woodwork more times for Ollie Watkins for Villa in the Premier League ever. Because Watkins hit the woodwork 10 or 11 times now in like just over. Wow, how long has he been? Is this his third season?
Third season, yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't even feel like that.
He does seem very unlucky. There was that season, wasn't it, two seasons ago, I think, where he was hitting. Felt like every other game he hit the woodwork or he had a goal disallowed for some kind of really marginal offside or handball decision back when those decisions were being called. So I think he's quite an unlucky player, to be honest. But I mean, I'm a big fan of him. I think sometimes his first touch lets him down and that sort of stuff, but partly because we're asking him to do so much, ball into feet and holding up the play or launching long balls forward and asking him to win headers against centre-backs who are like 3 or 4 inches taller than he is. I thought he was one who had a really good game. And then the other big sort of selection thing for me was, I guess, the centre-back decision again. You know, who to Mings. I'm very glad that we've seemed to be back into a position where Mings is virtually an automatic pick. Because I've said this a lot of times over the last 12 months, I guess, on this podcast. But an almost universal rule for me is that we play better with Tyrone Mings in the team. I can't really bring to mind a game where he hasn't played and we've been better off without him. I thought he was absolutely colossal. This weekend, I think won all of his aerial duels and won all of his tackles on the ground, I think. And it's that leadership that he brings, and he seems back, doesn't he? He had a little bit of a dip, I guess. And then obviously there was the off field stuff with having the captaincy taken off him and then, you know, being dropped and that sort of stuff. But I think he's really back to his best. He was just absolutely dominant, I thought. And I mean, Southampton were poor, let's be real. Like Villa this season in the league, we've beaten two teams who played very poorly on the day in Everton and Southampton. Like, you can only beat what's in front of you. But I just didn't ever feel like we were in danger of conceding to be honest. And I think a large part of that was down to how well marshaled our defence was. I had no problems with the lineup when it was announced, and I thought we weren't particularly inspiring in our performance, but I thought we were a very good value for the win, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't remember Southampton having a shot, but I'm just looking at the stats, and apparently they had one on target. It's interesting when you break it down. Gerrard would be happy, I guess. We had 53% of the possession, so there we go. We led that. Happy days for him. We had 11 shots, apparently. I do not remember there being 11 shots, three of them being on target to Southampton's one, of course. Southampton apparently had 7 shot attempts. We had 6 corners to their 3, and we both had 13 fouls each. Of course, one of those corners being Dougie Luiz trying to score again. I love the video of Villa fans literally now yelling shoot from corners, and it almost coming off every single time. I never thought that would be someone's skill set, especially within a Villa side, but nonetheless, we're lethal from corners now. So that's good to know.
And I don't actually mind it, because like I would have, if you'd have asked me before this season, if you'd told me we were going to shoot from most, you know, Douglas Luiz was going to be taking our corners for a start, and he was going to shoot from most of them, I'd have been like, what the hell are you talking about? But it seems like every time he does it, we either score or we nearly score. So if that's the tactic we want to go with, then fine. It seems to work pretty often. So,
well, it's funny too, though, because you think it's so obvious now that it's happening. Like, and he scored, what is it, 3 corners now or something like this season, or
If you count the preseason one, it's 3.
Yeah, so counting that, because I'm going to, because it is an amazing stat. Like, you think teams would figure that out and figure a way, but it just seems to keep causing a lot of trouble. I don't understand why. I don't understand how. But
we seem to have perfected the art of like blocking off the goalkeeper in a way that's not quite a foul. You know, like just under the line, the threshold of a foul on the goalkeeper, which is quite a skill in itself, given how overprotected goalkeepers are.
Well, at least Villa have perfected one thing in the last few seasons.
Austin McPhee earning his money. Just shoot. Yeah, just shoot, lads.
Austin, what should we do from the corners today? Nothing's working. Just shoot. Yeah. Come on, just have a go. Like, I really honestly don't know how you plan for that. But regardless of, I wouldn't be shocked if it just went in one day at training and they thought, you know what, this could work. This could really work. But anyways, more on a serious note, let's get over to something that's not good news, of course, and that's Boubacar Kamara. Of course, seems to be a knee injury from what I can see on replays and stuff. And of course, they kind of hoped he would make it to halftime, but that didn't happen, of course. And I mean, it's Villa, isn't it, Tom? We just can't have nice things at the end of the day. And you sit back and wonder now, is it Dougie Luiz that goes back into the defensive midfield position? Is it Leonard Donker? Does, as we previously discussed pre-recording, does Marvelous Nakamba come back in from, I guess, the cold or wherever the heck he is these days? The nicest man in football is somehow disappearing. But regardless of that, I guess, where do you sit with all that? And I mean, any time that I see Villa tweet out, get well soon to a player, usually it's rather significant. So we're going to have to figure something out soon, don't we?
Well, that's what I was going to say. And that's what I thought. Like, when you do, you get that, you know, wishing you a speeding recovery with the praying hands emoji or whatever. It's not a pulled hamstring. You're out for 2 weeks, is it? If you're putting that out, really. I do think it's a bit weird. I guess maybe they haven't had the results. He's gone for a scan and they haven't had the results yet or whatever, but it seems odd. I'm not sure if I was Villa's social media manager or I was, you know, whoever the social media manager reports to. I'm not sure I'd have gone with tweeting out, you know, that kind of wishing you a speedy recovery, Booba, without any details of what the actual injury is, because it's sort of gonna, all it's really done is fueled concern, right? But I mean, it's getting very similar vibes, aren't you, to the Diego Carlos one? And it's just if it is a long term thing, like he's done his knee or whatever, and he's out for a few months, like that is, I don't really think you can call it anything other than spectacularly bad luck to have your two, probably, well, I mean, your two main, okay, Coutinho on a permanent deal, but like your two main summer signings, the two players who were brought in to be the real difference makers to the core of your team, if within the first 7 games of the season they both get injuries that keep them out for several months. That is very unfortunate. And it's just the most frustrating thing, really, is that Kamara, like, he's only missed, I think before he came off just before halftime, didn't he, this weekend? I think before that, he'd only missed something like 15 minutes of our league campaign. I think he started every game. He came off in the last 10 minutes twice, I think. And apart from that, he's played the full 90. And he's clearly one of those players that if he stayed fit, I'd have backed him. If he'd stayed fit, I'd have backed him to get 38 starts this season in the league. I couldn't really see a situation other than suspension or injury where Gerrard's going to be looking at his team and thinking he doesn't want Boubacar Kamara at the base of midfield. And, you know, the most frustrating thing now is, A, Kamara's looked really assured. Like, not spectacular, but you're not necessarily going to be spectacular playing in a sort of defensive midfield role, are you? But he's very clearly a very good player. And it's clearly, I think, a real coup for us to have got him, especially on a free, ahead of the likes of Atletico Madrid or whoever else it was who was rumoured to be with him. Like, and so now to be back in the position that we were in last season of not really, apart from Nakamba, who Gerrard is another, he's another one that Gerrard doesn't really seem to rate. And I know that fans are a bit split on Nakamba about whether he is good enough to be that midfield anchor on a regular basis in the Premier League, which I do think is a fair concern because he's good at breaking up the play and that sort of stuff, but he doesn't have the next step, does he, that Kamara has, where you can win a tackle and then you can spray like a 30-yard pass out to the wing or whatever. Like, Nakamba doesn't really have that second
defensive midfielder.
yeah. With no disrespect to him, he has the first part, but doesn't quite have the second part. And so now to be back in that position of like you said, do you suddenly bring Nakamba, who's had like no game time at all, really? Do you suddenly put the weight on his shoulders of having to be Kamara's replacement? Because that, if you don't go down that route, Dendonka maybe, but I've seen a lot of stuff talking about Dendonka. Obviously I saw him play for Wolves a few times, but never really paid particular close attention. But a lot of fans seem to think he's a bit more sort of box to box or a bit more number eight rather than just a sit deep kind of midfielder. So do you throw Dendonka straight in? Or, because if you don't do that, then it's kind of got to be the sort of horrible situation that we were in last season, where you're asking Douglas Luiz to play in a position he doesn't want to play in, or you're putting a lot of the defensive burden on McGinn's shoulders, which is not really what you want given the narrative around McGinn's performances already this season. Like, you don't want to ask him to be playing a role that's not really his wheelhouse. So it's just really frustrating after thinking, you know, moving quickly and decisively. I think we were all, as fans, universally impressed with the way that Villa did business to bring Kamara in. And I remember saying on a podcast, on a Spaces before the season starts, like, if Kamara can be the player we want him to be, we've upgraded massively and we've hopefully solved a long-standing problem. And so now to be 7 games into the season, and I know nothing's been confirmed at the time of recording, I do think that might change on Monday when this comes out. I think we might get some word. But if he is out for a few months, just what a headache for us as fans, what a headache for Gerrard to solve again. And, you know, they've got to be pretty frustrated, haven't they?
Well, that's the thing too. I mean, you look at the schedule now, and I mean, maybe there almost is a little bit of kind of a blessing in disguise with the international break. Maybe it lets Gerrard and the coaching staff kind of figure things out. But realistically, we're just going to be, I mean, if Dougie comes right back in, then we're basically with the same squad as we were last season, even after making all these additions, which is massively frustrating and just kind of a sign of, I don't know if it's fortune or what you might call it at this point, but we just can't have nice things. But in terms of Kamara's injury, I'm going to assume it's at least a month. And if that's the case right now, of course, we're recording on Sunday the 18th. So that would mean in a month's time, he's already missing Leeds on October 2nd, Forest October 10th, Chelsea on October 16th. I mean, realistically, you probably at this point, I mean, November 13th is the last game before the World Cup break. So if we even get him past that, or before that, I should say, I'd be shocked.
Yeah, I'd say, like, it's purely speculative at the moment, but I just from the tone of the tweet and the way it's the fact that he got injured when like 42nd minute, something like that. And he couldn't even, you know, in that situation, 9 times out of 10, what you're trying to do as a manager and as a player is get them through to half time, right? And then assess, you got 15 minutes to assess them, to stretch it out, to, like, you know, get the physio in and stuff. And the fact that you couldn't even make it the, you know, 3 or 4 minutes to half time, then couple that with the tone of the tweet afterwards. It's purely speculation at this point, but I really get the feeling that we've seen the last of him until after the World Cup, so Boxing Day at the earliest. And it's just, I mean, I suppose in a way it's kind of a blessing. I mean, we're going to have one hell of a fixture pile up if we're not careful after the World Cup, but Leicester being postponed and then the World Cup break, at least we have the majority of our games to play after Boxing Day this year. So at least he's, you know, I suppose if you look at it that way, if it's a 3-month injury, for example, he's going to miss far fewer games this season than he would in a normal season. So I guess that's me desperately trying to spin a positive out of the situation. Yeah, I don't know. It's a huge blow if he's out for a long time, really.
Yeah. Well, let's hope it's only for a very, very short period of time and the scans come back or whatever they need to do for assessment purposes. And
yeah, we'll look like doom mongers now if it comes back and it's like, 2 weeks.
Exactly. But I don't know if you've heard, Tom, but do you know who's replacing him in the France squad?
Yeah, it's our guy Jordan Veretout, isn't it? I did see that. Yeah, poor Kamara, he was in that France squad for about 48 hours, wasn't he? Because yeah, he was called in to replace somebody. Yeah, I know. That's a blast from the past, isn't it? One of a few players from that awful relegation season who, you know, surprise, surprise, turned out to actually be quite good once they weren't wearing a Villa shirt anymore. Sometimes seems to be a bit of a pattern, doesn't it, really?
Well, as soon as I saw that, I thought, oh, someone's, like, and it was a Villa account tweeting it out. So I thought, oh, someone's just having me on. Like, there's no way this is actually true. No, it's true. Yeah. I don't know. If somewhere just down the line in the France setup, they thought that'd be funny just to throw the jokes at us. But regardless, that's actual news. And it's, I guess, like I said, poetic justice in some ways, probably for Veretout, considering how poor his time at Villa was from an overall performance standpoint from the whole squad. But regardless of that, back to the game a little bit regardless. I mean, of course, like I said, Jacob Ramsey does score. And I mean, Tom, like we said, there wasn't many clear goal scoring opportunities in this game. But for Jacob Ramsey to score just before halftime too, of course, an in-swinging ball, like we said, Watkins heading it, big save from the Southampton keeper, I do have to say, then it going awkwardly off the ball from that save, or off the crossbar, I should say, from that save, right to Jacob Ramsey. And I know there's a lot of controversy, probably more so from the Southampton perspective, because I couldn't give a crap if it was offside, because it counted now, from basically what Villa have been done by in the past in terms of not being an active player when the ball is being played into certain areas of the pitch, being played offside or playing onside, I should say, once an opposition player has touched it. I mean, it wasn't a pretty goal. We had to be happy with it. But I guess to give Southampton fans, if there is that one or two of them that are viewing this for some weird reason, to give them maybe a little bit of a talking point to keep them here, do you think it was offside? Should it have stood?
No, it wasn't offside. Should have stood, yeah. It's one of those that I think we might have had some drama like 2 years ago or whatever when VAR was getting all sorts of things wrong. But no, it's a deliberate attempt to play the ball by the defender, isn't it? To play the ball backwards. And yeah, no, fine. What I will say though is that, like you said, it's a goal very befitting of the game, I think. It would have been very, you know, had Philippe Coutinho, for example, bent one into the top corner from 30 yards, that wouldn't really have been reflective of the standard of the game. So it's nice to get a bit of pinball in the box. Double crossbar, bit of a mess. Suited the game nicely, didn't it? Like I said, I'm pleased for Ramsey. Because Ramsey was one player I have to say at the start of this season I was a little bit concerned about, because he set the bar quite high for himself last year. And I think as fans, we set the bar quite high for him. Because of that run he had, scored some really good goals as well, didn't he? And his performance level, and then to win, I can't remember what award he won, but he won an end of season award, didn't he, last year?
Was a young player?
I can't remember. Was it young player? I can't remember.
Probably.
so he, you know, he set we he set the bar very high for himself, and I think expectations were quite high. So I did expect that standard to maybe drop a little bit this year, because it's hard to maintain that at such a young age. But I'm pleased for him, really pleased for him, because his great assist for Bailey against City, all, you know, those months ago, it feels like that game. And then, yeah, just right place, right time, wasn't it, really? You know, this weekend. Did well to, I know it was underside of the bar, but did well to keep it down. Keep it down enough. And hopefully he can kick on from that, because I think he hasn't played badly by any stretch. I don't want to make it sound like I think he's played badly, but he hasn't exactly lived up to the high standard he set last year. But hopefully he can kick on from that now. It's a bit of a shame we've got another break, really, because it'd be good to, we've finally got some momentum going. It's another reason I was really pleased. Obviously, apart from the fact we needed 3 points, I was really pleased that we won, no matter what the game was like, you know, performance level. I was pleased that we won, because it really felt like we'd missed it with the Leicester game being postponed. We might lose that momentum from coming back against City and putting in what I think everyone agreed was our best performance of the season, really, against City. I was a bit concerned that with the Leicester game being postponed, all of that momentum and good work would sort of, you know, evaporate, and we'd lose that momentum. So great to get a win. Shame to have an international break. But yeah, if we can come back after, I know looking ahead, but if we can come back, Leeds, it's one of those. I hate playing Leeds, because yeah, you feel like it could be pretty much any score, don't you, really? I still can't work Leeds out at all under Jesse Marsh. I have no idea if they're any good, really. but I think that'd be quite a good game. I think it might be quite action packed. And if we can come out of that with a positive result, then hopefully we can put this start to the season behind us and really kick on in the sort of whatever 5 or 6 weeks we'll have before we have the World Cup break.
Yeah, I mean, like I was saying before we started recording, and I'm sure other Villa fans and football fans feel like this as well. Like, it's just so hard to get into the season with the amount of breaks and how stop-starty it's been, especially as of the last basically month. Of course, we all know what happened, of course, with the passing of the Queen and stuff like that. So that wasn't expected. That definitely could have been handled better in terms of delaying games and all that kind of stuff. But regardless of getting into that conversation, that's now outdated. Just looking at the table now, really briefly talking about Leeds here, I'm actually stunned to say they're in 10th place on 8 points after 6 games. For some reason, I thought they were below us, maybe because last season was so poor for them. But yeah, it's a weird one. I haven't figured out Leeds since they beat us when we were actually unreal for that like 3 or 4 game period, yeah, at the start of our 10th place season, where I thought we're just going to absolutely smash them, and they smashed us. But
yeah,
regardless of that, hopefully we can actually figure them out. Maybe Gerrard and Jesse Marsh will get in a fight. It seems like Jesse Marsh is a very, very aggressive person. So
he seems feisty, doesn't he?
Yeah, that'd be a good spout. But I feel like Austin McPhee or someone would get in the midst of that somehow, and hair pulling or something would happen. But you never know.
I'd forgotten. I'm looking through Leeds results. I'd completely forgotten that they beat Chelsea 3-0. I had completely forgotten about that game. So they beat Chelsea 3-0. And then 2 weeks later, they lost 5-2 at Brentford. So I just, like, I have no idea. Just no idea what to expect. Since they've been promoted, really, I've had no idea what to expect from them. Anytime I've watched Leeds, either against Villa or just as a neutral, no idea what I'm getting myself into. So yeah, it's hard. I think the main thing is going to be really interesting to see how Gerrard sets up, and it is going to be that midfield. Who's the third midfielder? If I was picking the team right now, it would be Dendonka coming in for me, because you can bring Luiz in, but the problem is I think Luiz will be feeling very aggrieved not to start. But who'd you start him instead of? Yeah. Fans will say McGinn, but get real, like, not being funny. Then is John McGinn's not getting dropped. So then do you drop Ramsey, who's just got an assist and a goal in his last 2 games? You don't drop Ramsey, do you, at this point? So my problem now is that I'd like to see Luiz start, but not if it's going to be the situation where he's being pushed back and he's playing as a number six, a position he's said he doesn't like playing in, a position he's clearly not as good in as he is as a, like, an eight. going forward and getting involved in some of our attacks. So I think given that, if I was picking the team right now, it'd be bring Dendonka in. Don't necessarily sit him as a six, like a very flat six where he doesn't come forward, but like definitely put the majority of the defensive duty and the grit and the hard work in midfield on his shoulders, because I think that's a role he can fill better than Luiz. And then it just means that you've got still got quite good options from the bench. Obviously, another factor with the midfield thing is Tim was getting a few minutes, wasn't he, at parts of last season, and he's not around now either. Doesn't look like Sanson. I mean, he appeared on the bench, Morgan Sanson, which I was stunned. The resurrection of Morgan Sanson, proof that he's still alive. But I don't think we can expect him to get minutes anytime soon, really. Poor guy. So I think it's going to be Dendonka. It's only really Dendonka and Luiz that we have now to fight out for that third midfield spot, realistically, unless Nakamba does come back into the fold, which I think he should start to at least get time from the bench now. If Kamara's out for a while, because you need to sort of start getting him some minutes so that if the game calls for it, or like what if Dendonka gets injured or picks up an injury, and like then you're really all of a sudden you're almost down to bare bones in midfield. Just ridiculous to be talking about that after thinking we'd solved the midfield problem. You know, just so frustrating.
It's never dull. But the thing I was thinking about too, Tom, is was it last season? And maybe you won't remember, but correct me if I'm wrong. Did Callum Chambers play at DM against Leeds last season? Was that the game he played?
Can't remember.
But okay, regardless of that, maybe he's an option too. To be honest, the fact that he still isn't playing over Cons does shock me. We don't need to have that debate because I feel like we've had that debate 10 times. But I mean, it is a consideration. And it is.
I'd sort of forgotten about that as an option, to be honest. But
yeah, I don't know. I don't really, like we said, I don't want to go too much into Leeds because, of course, it's like 2 weeks away now. but I don't really know what to expect from them. A lot of it under Bielsa was pace and speed and high press, and under Jesse Marsh, I'm not really sure. I just know it's Captain America or Team America, basically, based on the summer recruitment. So aside from that, I don't know what to expect, but I would not be shocked to see Luiz start and then Dendonka come in to kind of clear up the rest of the game or vice versa. If we're chasing it, kind of swap it out for someone who can play the ball a little bit better than Luiz. But regardless of that, I think Nakamba probably will be on the bench considering Kamara will be out of the squad now. You would imagine, unless we just put another youth player in there. But or I don't know, maybe there's another player we've forgotten about from like six seasons ago that's still kicking around. I don't know. I don't know if there is. I would not be shocked at this point. Sign Chris Samba for like a month loan or something like that. He could sit on the bench. I'm sure he's not doing much these days. But anyways, that's just an homage to Steve Bruce playing him at striker. Anyways.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. Glory days, man.
At least we're not doing that anymore.
We've come a long way. It's a good reminder of how far we've come, isn't it, really?
Yeah, for people that can be annoyed about we only beat Southampton 1-0 in a pretty, I guess, drab victory, we can always remember the times where Chris Samba started a striker, or we spent 15-odd million on Ross McCormack and he scored basically like three goals or whatever it was and got stuck in his own gate. But regardless of those times, we don't have to talk about them anymore.
One more, just back to the, like, one more thing I wanted to mention about the game is I thought Young was good again.
Brilliant.
Really good. Like, I've been very, very impressed with Ashley Young since he came in. And like, I sort of can't believe, I remember like when we first signed him last summer, I was really, really pleased with his signing because I thought it's just one Serie A, fitter, somehow now physically fitter than he was as a like 23-year-old, you know, when he was going up and down the wing. And he's really got that nous, hasn't he? We've talked about before, like bit of gamesmanship, which is, honestly, it's the kind of thing. It's the kind of thing I think we've been missing for too long. Is knowing how to close out a game, and you know, knowing what you can and can't get away with. Like he's a veteran, and he's a sort of wily old character, isn't he, Ashley Young? He knows what he's doing. But his performance level has been great, and I can't really believe. I know that with a club, I think any football club has this, but obviously we can only talk about what we know with Villa. But like on, you know, online on social media and stuff, you do get an extreme range of opinions from fans. I really struggle to believe that there was a section of our fan base who were against the idea of re-signing Ashley Young on another one-year deal. I remember seeing it at the time. People were like, thought it was a terrible idea to re-sign him. And I couldn't get my head around it at all. Because even, I was thinking, you know, similar to what we said when we signed him first time, you know, when we signed him last summer, even if he doesn't play very much, what a guy to have in the dressing room. But the fact that he's come in, I thought he was absolutely exceptional against City when he came off the bench. Kind of locked down Phil Foden for most of the game, you know. And then I thought he was really good again. Really good again. You know, not perfect, doesn't, you know, get absolutely everything right. But he's genuinely, I feel a bit sheepish for being slightly surprised at how high his performance level is, because I should have known, really, playing as a wing back in an Antonio Conte system and winning the league, you know, to the year before we re-signed him. I would never have thought that if Cash got injured, which, by the way, do we know when Cash is coming back? I feel like I haven't really heard very much about this Cash injury, which is a bit weird. But I was, you know, I'd have never have thought that Matty Cash getting injured and possibly being one of those injuries that rolls on and you don't know when he's going to come back. I'd have never thought that I'd have felt so comfortable without Cash at right back. But actually, I have no qualms at all about Villa continuing with Young at right back for the foreseeable future, because I think he's been absolutely excellent.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, 100%. I'm just kind of looking at the Matty Cash stuff right now, as you mentioned it. I know he's not obviously traveling with Poland to play international games, so I think it's just like international break thing based on what I can see. Yeah, that's been one that's been really under the wraps and not really talked about, which is surprising, but maybe that's also because Cash hasn't played that well this season, probably thus far, you'd have to say, as much as we probably expected near the end of last season.
Well, on that topic, you know, I'd talk a bit, it'd be interesting to know the other guys' opinion, you know, Danny and Seb and Simon's opinions on this, but I'll ask you, what do you think genuinely when Cash is fit again? Do you think Gerrard's got a bit of a selection dilemma on his hands there? Or do you think Cash automatically comes straight back in?
I think it depends when he comes in. If it's right back against Leeds, then you're kind of going into that schedule. And of course, I just kind of got rid of Villa's schedule, so I'll just quickly pull it up so I actually know what I'm talking about. But it's tricky because you're going to have just a jam-packed schedule basically up until the World Cup break. So yes and no. I feel like there's going to have to be rotation regardless. Like, for example, we play Chelsea on the 16th, and then 4 days later on the 20th, we play Fulham. 3 days later, then we play Brentford, and then only, 6 days later, we play Newcastle. So there has to be that rotation in there, you'd figure, anyways. Mm-hmm. So we had to bulk up the squad regardless, but I think this is kind of the main example of why to do so. Now, in regards to the next game, I mean, I'd play Ashley Young. I have no issue with that. I do agree. Like, I think there is some surprise that he's playing this well, but I think there's also that there's almost like a disconnect or a struggle for people to comprehend the Ashley Young of old Villa versus modern Villa now when he's 38. But let's be real. Look at John Terry in the past. You can look at Ronaldo, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, the list goes on and on. Players are older and older, are still playing at the higher level because people have figured out how to take care of themselves. Actually, isn't that hard if you continuously do it for a longer period of time? So, I mean, he switched his game set. It's not all about pace and speed and just kind of beating your man and kind of tracking back in that manner. It's about timing and positioning, and he's clearly mastered that. Like you said, you don't play for Antonio Conte at that age unless you're more than capable and fit enough to be in that regime, because we've all heard the fitness requirements and demands that he requires of his teams. So at the end of the day, 100%. I mean, it doesn't really, maybe some people can say cash is better going forward. I mean, as of this season, I would probably argue that's been a bit of a struggle, because some of the set piece and crossing deliveries from his side have been particularly poor. I don't know. It's a toss up. I know people also wanted Kane, Kessler, Hayden to stick around, but I think that's also a pipe dream of just wanting young, hungry Villa players in there to kind of succeed when they probably need to go out and develop. So I can see all kind of points about it. But I mean, at the end of the day too, if cash was out even longer, it would solely be Ashley Young's responsibility, because there's no way in hell that I could ever see Freddie Gilbert playing this in this Villa team under Gerrard ever again, for reasons I will never understand why. But regardless of that, it is what it is.
I think the fact that we're having this conversation, I guess, and the fact that cash isn't an automatic starter shows a bit of a shift in mindset, I guess. Because I'd have thought, you know, last season, you know, I'd have thought cash is one of the, I'd have called Matty Cash one of the least likely Villa players to have his place in the side in jeopardy. You know, there was no way that cash was going to be going to be taken out of the starting lineup unless it was an enforced change. Whereas now it's, you know, I do think it's a genuine conversation about the way forward at right back. And like you say, maybe, you know, the fact that we're going to have such a packed schedule, I imagine there might be some rotation. And at least now with Young, like, you've got the luxury of being able to ease cash back in. Because if it's like a muscle injury and it's one of those that, okay, you do recover, but it's still a little bit, you know, tight for a couple of weeks once you're back in training or whatever. Like, we don't have to rush Matty Cash back if we don't want to, do we, anymore? So that's, like you say, it shows the importance of having that squad depth and having very, very capable deputies in these positions.
Well, just being able to pull him out of the firing line in general too, if he's not playing well. Like, we didn't really have that luxury last season. I mean, we still had Ashley Young, but it seems like we just played Matty Cash, whether it was through any kind of, I guess, level of performance, which is frustrating, because when you know a player is struggling for a month and you can see it as fans, it's just massively aggravating. But now, I mean, there is that solid option, which, again, like I said, has been there for the last season plus, but it's nice to see it actually coming to fruition where fans are actually comfortable with it now. I think the Man City result, just like, I'm not taking anything away from Ashley Young, but I think that impressive of a performance against that impressive of a team has really raised his stock to an insane amount, where if it was a draw or a win against, no disrespect to, like, I don't know, say like a Fulham or something, I don't feel like we'd probably have as much stock in it. But the fact that it is easily the best team in the league, that has massively helped.
I think that's a fair point. And actually, you were talking about talking about Villa's schedule, you know, coming up, and you mentioned there's a Chelsea game coming up mid-October, right? So, yeah, so Leeds away, Forest away, Chelsea at home. I'm almost in a situation where, even if cash is fit, I'm kind of finding myself feeling that I'd rather have Ashley Young against a team like Chelsea at right back than cash. Because I think Young's defensive ability is better than I was giving it credit for last year. Yeah. And I think that's the kind of, Chelsea at home is the kind of game as well where having Young's wiliness, as I said before, and his nous and his, like, kind of gamesmanship really comes in handy. And I do think sometimes, like, Cash, I really like Cash. I think he's a very good player, and got a lot of potential, you know, a lot of room to grow as well in terms of age and in terms of his ability. But he's still, for me, sometimes a little bit naive. And I think you can get away with that with, like, not that Leeds and Forest are easy games whatsoever, but, like, you know, you can maybe get away with that a little bit more. Whereas a game like Chelsea, I'd almost rather have Young's experience and now said. Anyway, I'm getting so far ahead of myself. Sorry. It's because there's a two. It's because there's a break coming up, an international break, and I don't want to confront the reality that Villa have just won, and then now we don't play again for 2 weeks again.
Yeah, and we have to watch really drab international games, or basically that's all social media will be. To be honest, I don't really pay attention to of it.
There's no way I'm watching England this. No. I haven't watched an England game. I don't think I've watched an England game in full since the final. I don't know. I don't care. You know, I just really don't care.
I honestly, this has nothing to do with Villa, but I would honestly love if major media outlets, TV outlets, whatever, live stream lower division games or non-league games or something when there's international football. I need something. To be honest, as a Canadian, especially when I see I don't know, I'm scrolling through and it's United States versus Jamaica. Do I really want to watch that? No, I'm going to skip through it. It's a mental holiday for almost 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Without any Premier League or Villa or anything like that, at least. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. But the thing I did actually want to bring up quickly in regards to the whole Ashley Young discussion that we're randomly having, and to be honest, it's actually a good chat, so why not continue it here for a moment? I do kind of sit back and look at it too, and it's nice to know that, like you said, against Chelsea, we don't have to have two bombarding fullbacks, where it is massively, in my opinion, naive to go against a team like a Chelsea or a City or I wouldn't say United these days, but regardless of that, Liverpool. And you're just going to basically have your fullbacks consistently bomb forward and expect them to get back and maintain that level of quality against very high opposition. I don't mind the idea of having Luka Dean do his thing on the one side and Ashley Young kind of hold it on the other side. I kind of like that kind of rotation, like you said, and it's kind of almost a breath of fresh air. And whether that's Gerrard finally cluing into that he needs to change things, or it's an act of desperation that he needs to, whatever it is, it's nice to know that even though it's kind of a forced change, it's actually being done, and it's not expecting a 38-year-old to kind of have the same performance or the same play style as he did 10 years ago, which is the nice thing. But anyways, we don't need to have the Gerrard debate. So
it's an interesting point about the fullback to bombing forward. I think I'm not going to start a whole conversation about Leon Bailey right now, because otherwise we're going to be here for hours. I have my opinions on Bailey, but I'll save those for my unfortunate Twitter followers. What I will say is that I think, for example, about the fullbacks bombarding forward, I think Leon Bailey, for example, is a better player when he's on the right wing and he's playing in front of Ashley Young than when he's playing with Matty Cash. Because Bailey and not, I think if you have Bailey on the right wing and Young's behind him, I actually think that offers a bit more security and allows Bailey to sort of, because, you know, Bailey's one of these players a bit like Bertie Traore was, a bit chaotic and obviously likes having the ball at his feet, and naturally and understandably loses the ball quite a lot, because he's probably the player in our team who tries the most with the ball, with the ball at his feet, tries to beat players. And, you know, so obviously you're not going to have 100% success rate with that approach, and you're going to lose the ball quite a lot. I'd much rather have Ashley Young on the halfway line, you know, while we're attacking on the right, you know, have him on the halfway line on the right wing than have Matty Cash, you know, almost at the byline like he is sometimes, or alongside Bailey, because then I think there's just a bit more security in that regard. So I think, you know, it's like I say, like we're saying, really, I think it's good to have the options, and it's good that in Cash and in Young, we actually have two quite different styles of right back, I guess. And I think I've been I'm very critical of Gerrard sometimes, but one thing I've been pleased with is that I do think he's learned a bit of a lesson with that fullback situation. Because back end of last season, it was honestly at times it was a bit ridiculous the way we were trying to play. Can play that with Rangers. No disrespect to them, but if you've got James Tavernier, is that their right back who scores 15 goals a season? that's fine for Rangers, but if you try and do that against Chelsea, you know, at home in a few weeks' time, you're going to get Raheem Sterling's going to tear you to shreds with 30 yards of space to run into on the left wing. And I think Gerrard's learned his lesson a little bit in that regard, which is good. I thought that I was pleased with his post-match interview. We've criticised him a few times about comes across as quite stubborn and quite arrogant sometimes, but I can't remember exactly what he said post game, but he said something about, you know, we tried to run before we can walk. And it sounds a little bit like he's finally starting to learn some of the really hard lessons that you're faced with as a Premier League manager. It's kind of taken him long enough, to be honest, but hopefully we're getting to a point now where he's getting a little bit more savvy. And if that is the case, I think we'll reap the reward in the coming weeks, but remains to be seen, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we've talked ourselves into this whole Gerrard will finally get it thing for about a year now. It's still to be determined, to be honest. I have my doubts, but regardless of that, no, you are right. Like, it is nice to have that difference in tactical style. And like, in regards to like a Bailey setup with Ashley Young, 100%. The only way that works is unless you have a wide attacking midfielder who is also willing to backtrack when you have overlapping fullbacks. And let's be honest, Bailey backtracks maybe once a game successfully. Yeah. So realistically, honestly,
the best wide player we've had for that in recent years, in my opinion, was Trezeguet. That was one of his real strengths, right? Was that backtracking thing. Whereas, like, you just got to be realistic. You're not going to really get it from Bailey. The same way you're not really going to find Coutinho dropping deep to retrieve the ball in midfield. You know, like, I feel like as long as you know your player's strengths and weaknesses and you play to those strengths and weaknesses, that's fine. It's when you ignore those truths that the issues really come, right?
Absolutely. Well, just to get back to the Southampton game briefly, we'll do the three-word reviews that our Twitter followers sent in, and the listeners, of course. You can follow us at 7500hole on Twitter. Usually it goes out about anywhere between 5 to 15 minutes post-match. Just send in your three-word reviews on the result. There's always a bunch of them, and there's some good interactions between followers and people kind of posting, so it's always good to see that. Oh, also some really counterproductive arguments that I do enjoy kind of sitting back a few hours post-match and giggling at, but regardless of that, please keep doing it because it is enjoyable to read. So let's start with Colin Frederick saying it was fine. Adam Holt says important 3 points. Chinny 68 saying wins a win. Harry thinks get him out, as in Gerrard still. Let's go to Hint Juan saying watching paint dry. Mark says awful, sack him. And I have read through a lot of these and I'm still stunned. And I've read these 2 days ago, and I'm still stunned to see how much negativity there is even after a win. But you know what? It was drab, so I will give people some credit. Mark saying papering over cracks. Hampton Scott saying Konsa looked better. Tom Holder, truly awful match. JGX1 did the job, and we'll do about 3 or 4. Why not? Let's see. Seth says season sustaining win. Aston Villa Rise saying we will take that, and we'll do 2 more. Let's scroll all the way to the bottom. There's like 90 of these, so bear with me here. Let's do Candon Man saying scrappy, unconvincing win. And let's finish with Jay Allen, maybe the best way to describe this, gritty, dogged, determined. I'm not sure why I try to change his tweet in my mind, but regardless of that, actually let's do one more because we have brought this up and we talked about it like 20 minutes ago. Wally saying Brucey Ball reincarnated.
Yeah, we weren't gonna broadcast that on the podcast, were we? That was I mean, the thing I was picking up on, just the one about papering over cracks. Yeah. One thing I will say is, like, it remains to be seen, right? Like, if we go on and we lose to Leeds and then we don't get a positive result Forest away after that, then, I mean, A, Twitter will be an absolute dumpster fire. But also we can have that conversation about papering over cracks. What I will say is, we said this on a pod a few weeks ago, I think, like, it's in terms of the Gerrard thing, like, I know for a fact that we all on this podcast have some level of reservation about Gerrard. I think that's natural. But the one thing I'll really say is, like, there, Perslow and our owners are clearly all in on Gerrard. He's not going to get sacked anytime soon.
No.
Like, it's just not. Like, they're not good. They haven't torn everything up, appointed Gerrard, brought in some signings for him in the summer just to sack him in like October. It's not like, unless might be different if we lose 4-0 at Leeds and then lose 4-0 at Forest. That might make it a bit more of a pressing issue. But I just can't see it happening anytime soon. So the only option we really have is to hope that he's learning as a manager, hope that we continue to see improvement, and keep supporting Villa, as we will do. And we'll see where we are, I think. I think realistically, the only time at which the club will reassess will be going into the World Cup break. If things are really bad by mid-November, maybe it becomes more of a legitimate question about what, you know, about our way forward. But until then, I think we can, to be honest, I think we can bench talk about Gerrard's job security, to be honest.
Yeah, like you said, the results would have to be catastrophic for him to leave anytime soon. I think it would have to be the World Cup break, and even then there's probably going to be a bit of a lull, because then you have kind of managers up in the air. That's, I feel like it's going to be a very busy time for clubs to kind of decide what they're doing, because they have an unusual break mid-season. So I wouldn't be shocked to see a lot of chop and change managerial-wise and coaching staff-wise there. One last thing, Tom, actually, before we mention the Villa women here quickly, this is a longer pod, which is completely fine, to be honest, because, let's be honest, there's nothing really Villa-related to probably talk about for a couple of weeks, at least until we hear the news about Boubacar Kamara's injury and how long that'll probably be, which my luck will be right after this gets out. But in regards to that match, who is your man of the match / who is your match ball going to?
Obviously, shout out to Jacob Ramsey for the winner. We've already shouted out a couple of people. Ashley Young, I thought, was very good. For me, though, I'm going to go with Tyrone Mings. I'm a big fan of Tyrone Mings. Like, you're either a big fan of him or you're a big not fan of him, aren't you, really, as a Villa fan? Like, there's no real middle ground. I thought it was excellent. And, like, Southampton didn't really threaten very much, but that's partly because of, I thought their game plan was a bit weird. I thought Hasenhüttl should have gone for it a bit more. But you can only beat what's in front of you, and you can only manage the game that you're faced with, if you see what I mean. And I thought Mings was excellent. Won everything, the leadership, you know, is, we need that in the back line. And I thought Konsa had a better game. And I actually think part of the reason, no disrespect to Konsa, I think playing alongside Tyrone Mings makes Konsa look better. And not because Mings is bad, as some people would try and spin that probably, but because Mings is the kind of player, I think, who makes his central defensive partners look better, because Mings does so much of the leadership, does so much of the organization, does so much of the work. Like, Mings won everything. And, you know, if you have that solid foundation at the back, you're always more likely to win a game of football.
Absolutely. I'm going to second that with Mings. I mean, let's be honest, there wasn't too many standouts on Friday, but regardless of that, it's nice to see Mings prove people wrong again. I mean, I did see people on social media whinging when I think he had that one kind of long stray ball that was basically just a clearance that ended up in the Southampton keeper's hands. But you're never going to please everybody. But again, yeah, he makes Cons look better. He makes the backline confident. There's that communication that, as much as I've been impressed in spurts with Diego Carlos pre-injury, I just feel like we were massively lacking that communication that Mings brings. And that is, well, there's a little rhyme there too, but it's so important. And again, I found it massively odd that we just put a Brazilian player in his spot that really probably can't speak that great English. You're kind of almost setting yourself up for failure. I mean, again, we started playing with Carlos and Mings anyways, and that seemed probably would be the way forward as soon as Carlos is back too. But anyways, I'll stop ranting and let's just quickly talk about Villa women on this super long edition of the Holtcast, Tom, because why not? Of course, they've won today on Sunday 4-3 over Manchester City women. A massive, massive result in terms of how that starts a season. Again, we were pre-recording, we were talking about this, and I'm still stunned to see that they start the season that late, which is, you never know why that is the reason. I guess probably because they play less games. But like I said, Tom, a massive win. Just kind of getting the stats up here. What I think Rachel Daly had, was it a goal or two goals and an assist or something like that? They were 2-0 up early on, 3-2 down shortly after halftime. I think the 55th minute or something like that. They were 3-2 down, scored the equalizer shortly after, and then scored again, I think, in the 70, ninth minute or something like that as well. I mean, that's one hell of a comeback against a team that has a lot of investment, a lot of definitely promise in that City side. And I'm not going to pretend to be extremely knowledgeable about the Barclays WSL by any means, but I mean, hell, if games like that are that entertaining, if Villa Park is packed like it is for that kind of game and they're that exciting, I could see a lot of I guess Villa fans getting engaged in the women's side more so even than the men's side if poor performances continue, couldn't you?
Well, it's good that one Villa team's exciting, isn't it? Yeah. Like it's good to have something going for us in that respect. But I mean, it's great, and it's great to see. It looked like the turnout. I didn't have a way over in Canada of watching the game. I think it was on something like Sportsnet World, which won't mean anything to our non-Canadian listeners. but I don't have that. I didn't have a way of watching it, but I was following it, you know, on social media and saw a couple of clips of that. Saw Alicia Lehmann's goal and Rachel Daly, her first goal, I think. It was fantastic. And I mean, it's just great, A, to put on such a show on the season opener and then to sort of capitalize, I think, on the natural, you know, the expected heightened interest in women's football. It's been growing up for years and years. And then obviously, like, England in the summer has done women's football the world of good. And then for Villa to sign Rachel Daly, who was like a pretty key player for England during that tournament, and then scores two goals on her debut. It's great. You know, I know actually some family members back home went to the game, and I saw that a few people, you know, quite a few people I follow on, you know, Villa Twitter were at the game. And I think there's a real opportunity this season for the club, I think, to capitalize on the heightened interest and try and promote Villa are quite good at promoting the women's team, but, you know, even more so, because the more people you can get, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to, not only new generations of Villa fans as kids, but Villa fans who grow up watching both the men's team and the women's team and are an equal fan of both. I think there's real opportunities to create that kind of situation this year. And what a way to start, yeah.
Well, and I think you told me a stat pre-recording too, that they've already scored 30% of the goals they scored last season or something like that. So, I mean, that's one hell of a start too.
Doesn't reflect well on last season, but reflects very well on this weekend's result, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, it's great to see Villa Park get that filled for this kind of game, because I know in previous times, just kind of either watching or seeing photos, that hasn't been, but it seems like there's a lot of excitement and support there. And why the hell not? Like, let's be honest, the men's team is not doing that well. It's great to see, at least, like Thomas said, one portion of the football club doing well. And I mean, like I said before, if they're going to be this exciting for most games, I mean, they're going to be probably one of the teams to watch, not only in that league, but probably throughout all of football this season, because that's one hell of a result. And I mean, especially you probably wouldn't want to give up a 2-0 lead and go 3-2 down, but to claw it back and score two unanswered, that's one hell of a way. So good on them. And yeah, we'll have to keep an eye on, see how they do. Actually, I don't think they don't match the same international break as men's games, so they should have a game coming up too. I should have actually done more research. But jokingly, and I did say this to Tom pre-recording too, I do love how most of their games are going to be played at the Poundland Bescot Stadium. If you want a worse name for a stadium, please let me know, or tweet us at 7500 hold if you have any clues of worse football stadium names or arena names in general. That has to be one of the worst, in my opinion. Do you want to play at Poundland? Probably not.
There's where I am in Toronto, Toronto, sorry, for our British listeners. There's the Coca-Cola Coliseum.
Oh, yes.
Where the Toronto Marlies play. Which I always think is quite tin pot as far as stadium names go.
Yeah, there's not too much creativity. Like, I can think of hockey ones like Scotiabank Arena. Basically, everything over here is dependent on sponsorship names. But regardless of that, I'm sure there's other ones. Like, we all know, like Tom mentioned pre-recording to the Sports Direct Arena that never quite took off in Newcastle and things like that. Of course, like I said, tweet them in. I'd be happy to read them out and give them a like and Yeah, share them around. But anyways, Tom, I think that's good enough. We've been going definitely for more than long enough. I'm shocked we've got this much out of a 1-0, very dull win with a 3.
I knew before we came on and started recording when you said we'll keep this to 30, 40 minutes. I was like, we say that very often and we forget how much when we get started, it's hard to stop us, I think.
Well, to be fair, last time you were on a time crunch, we needed only half an hour. You only had half an hour, and that's we did true, it within then. So we'll give ourselves some slack in regards to that, but we'll have to wait and see. But anyways, hopefully everyone enjoys this. Of course, show it some support, share it around if you can like it, or give it a rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. It's greatly appreciated. I'm not sure if we'll have anything over the international break. I'm hoping to have some kind of special episode out maybe next week or kind of the week leading into the Leeds United game. But regardless of that, we should hopefully and for sure will be back post Leeds, or at least hopefully have a preview out. We'll have to be a little bit more organized here. The start of the season has been so topsy-turvy, just all over the board. But anyways, it's good to be back, and yeah, we'll leave it there. Don't forget the Villa.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.